Okay. Professionalism on display. Y'all watch out. We've been following Luke's gospel from the pronouncement to the women about who this Jesus was going to be, this child that came out of this unique union between the divine and the human and came to bring powerful resolution to the problems of the world. That child was born into humble beginnings and set up a course from the get-go where power would be brought to account. That child from those humble parents who couldn't even afford a magnificent donation was presented at the temple and blessed and called the Messiah and known to be the one who would deliver the world. And then that child grew up and taught in the temple, ran away from the parents a little bit, and then was baptized by his cousin in the Jordan, and then began to understand who he would be as Messiah, and proclaimed in his first public sermon that he was the one who would fulfill the call to set the captives free, that he would be the one who released the prisoners and brought sight to the blind, that he would be the one in whom the power of God was put on display, even in the midst of a society that was overrun by imperial Roman power. We move from that proclamation to last week when we talked, or 2 weeks ago when we talked about the calling of the disciples and the miraculous catch of fish and this power to catch and to move. And then to last week where Jesus stands up to authority and he tells those in charge that he is the Lord of the Sabbath and that the rules and regulations they have used that were from God, that they have used wrongly to separate and to judge, will not be in place anymore, that God is on earth in Jesus not to do harm but to do good. And it doesn't matter if it's the Sabbath or not, we do the right thing. Well, between that story and this story, there's a very powerful thing that happens in Luke. It's called the Sermon on the Plain in Luke. And in Matthew, it's called the Sermon on the Mount. But in Luke, it's even more pointed. Matthew kind of soft sells Luke's version a little bit. Where Matthew will say, blessed are the poor in spirit, Luke will say, blessed are the poor. Because they're going to get their reward. And woe to the rich, because you already got yours. And he says, love your enemies. Because really, what good does it do you to love your friends? Everybody does that. Love those who persecute you. Jesus gives this impassioned, powerful proclamation of the subversive way that God is showing up in him. And he leaves that plain and he starts walking and he gets to Capernaum and he runs in to these good Jewish leaders who need a favor because their benefactor, the centurion, Broomhead. Really, I hope they called him that. I wish I knew the Greek for it. I really wish I knew the Yiddish for it, but I don't. All my Yiddish is inappropriate, so we'll just leave it. I learned it all from Mel Brooks. They need something for this centurion. And this centurion is a fantastic character because he is one who has been given much. And he is a great example because he's been given much and he has done much with what he has been given. There's a lot to be said for the way he has invested his resources for the benefit of his community. For whatever practical political reasons he might have had, he has benefited those with whom he has no religious affiliation. And in some ways, he is modeling a way of life we ought to be looking at about what is good for the community. He's so good, in fact, that when the Jewish leaders come up to Jesus, they seem like manipulative. They're trying to talk Jesus into coming here and doing this miracle because this guy has invested all this money. And then the guy just shows up and says, I'm not really worth that. And Jesus heals from afar. And this is on par with what he's been doing. Throughout the Gospel of Luke, Jesus has proclaimed a powerful message and he has backed it up with acts of power. But it's after he heals the centurion's slave and he is walking into Nain that we find a new way that Jesus' power will be manifested. If you're a regular attender, I'm glad. I like seeing you every week. And there's a continuity that's important here, because the very first thing we're going to hear next week from John's disciples is, are you really the Messiah? And Jesus is going to point to something that happens in today's story. He's going to point to what happens as he is walking into Nain. And if you have a vivid imagination, or if you'll allow me to set your imagination a little bit, it is a powerful image that appears throughout the Gospels of two colliding groups. Here is Jesus, and we're told he's so powerful, and he's so awesome, and he's so Jesus that he's got a crowd with him. And they are walking with him, and it is full of vibrancy and life and all the goodness that is there in Jesus. And there's another crowd they encounter, a crowd of mourning and death and dismay. They are carrying out of town this widow's only son. In that time, this means that she will become as disvested in the community as she can be. It's a patriarchal society, which means that wrongly. I don't believe this is the way the world should be anymore. But in that society, her value was found in her relationship with the men in her life. And so she's already a widow, which means she has no husband to present her to the city. And now she should have been presented through her son, and her son is now dead. She is becoming the least of these in the midst of this funeral procession. So in the midst of her heartbreak and sorrow that the one she loved has gone, she is also coming to the realization that what power, what little power she may have had, is going away. And here is this big crowd of life, and here is this crowd of death. And as they come together, Jesus pays attention, and he sees her pain, and he has what the NRSV calls compassion. It's a word used three times in the Gospel of Luke, this particular word. It's the Greek splagnizomai, which comes from splachna, which is really awesome because it means guts. It literally means intestines. He is moved from his guts. Sometimes we do the right thing. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes when we do the right thing, we do the right thing because we know it's the thing we ought to do, and we talk ourselves into it, right? I don't want to do it. I have no driving force to do the right thing, but I know I've got to do it, so I do it. You know, sometimes that's just where we're at. I'm not discounting that. But that's not what Jesus is doing. He doesn't see her and go, man, you know, there's a bunch of people watching me, and they've already wanted me, and I could just look over here. In my house, we call this pulling a Dr. Bailey. We had a friend whose dog was so awkward, anytime you got onto it, it just did this. He said, Dr. Bailey! And so anytime you wanted to just avoid a particularly awkward situation, you just turn your head up and to the right. Like if you're somewhere and there's a person crying, and it's weird when people cry in public, and you think, I know I ought to do something about that, but my own moral imperative is not functioning very well today, so instead what I will do is this. Pulling a Dr. Bailey is dangerous if you do it while you're moving, by the way. It's a great chance to walk into things. Look, maybe you're not that awkward. I don't know. I know some of you. You are that awkward. Don't worry about it. But we all do this. We all have this moment where we're like confronted by some uncomfortable reality where we know that mentally we ought to help, but we just, man, it's been a rough week, right? And so we look away. Because we like to think that if we pretend like we didn't see, then it's okay. Well, the thing that happens with Jesus is way beyond any of that. He hurts with her. The title of the sermon this week was not simply an attempt to see how many prepositions you can stick in a row. Three is how many I got, with over four. It is instead an idea that we are being called to be people who are moved by our guts to be with those in pain. Since I titled the sermon, I've been a little convicted about that. I want to talk just a little side note. I think it is best, most of the time, to be people who suffer with. Okay? That means that we get outside of ourselves and our comfort. We don't avoid the situation. And in fact, we become so problematically tender-hearted that we are moved in our guts by the plight of others. That we let our shell that keeps us sane most of the time get broken enough that we are suddenly, next thing you know, those weirdos crying in public because we are overwhelmed by the pain of others. There are times when people do good things for others, okay? That's where I've had a little conviction post-titling the sermon. There are times when there are people who have done amazing things for large groups of people. And I think that's a great starting place. I'm not dismissing the good that does. But what I am saying is what Jesus, in this story, we see as we follow this movement, is we see a centurion who has done good for people. And then we see a God who is moved with people. He, Jesus, in the midst of a crowd, has every reason to keep on walking. He is surrounded by people. He is dealing with the presence of this moment where they are following him, and he is teaching, and he is on mission. And he stops the important work he is doing to be present from his gut with this broken woman. I don't know about you, but if I was in the crowd with Jesus, there is a part of me that would be like, again? Come on, Jesus. Can't we just walk somewhere one time without stopping to deal with this other thing? No, it's just not how Jesus works. Jesus just is very comfortable with being sidetracked all the time by the plight of those present. And so he comes to this woman and he is moved and he talks to her and he says, "Don't cry." This is an important story for a number of reasons. One of them being the only one of the three times that this particular word is used in Luke for from the gut. But also, this is the first time, this is a big deal, because Jesus has been casting out demons and healing people and restoring hands and flouting his power in the face of the Pharisees. But until this moment, all the dead people have stayed dead. But not anymore. Jesus is so moved and so powerful that the dead won't stay dead. And he says, "Get up." And I wish I could do that. I wish I had that kind of power. I wish that if I had that kind of power, I would use it the right way. There may be a reason I don't have that kind of power. "Get up." And instead of being like, "Hey man, did you guys see what I just did? That dude was dead. Now he's up." It's intimate. It's powerful. It's personal. The son gets up and he gives the son to the mom. It is this tiny little circle of pain and healing and hope that Jesus excludes the power and the prestige for a moment just to be with her. Can't bring people back from the dead. But I can be with people when they hurt. I can hold them when my words fail or only offer more damage than help. I can sit with them while they cry. I can tell them inappropriate jokes when they need to laugh. Some of you get that from me on occasion. Or really good YouTube videos. I can be with somebody even if I'm not comfortable. We live in a world where it is so easy to be disconnected despite all of our connection. We live in a world where it's so easy to offer platitudes and a thumbs up on Facebook. This is not an anti-technology rant, but it is to say we can't forget that you are actually called as followers of Jesus and the way of Jesus to get outside of the barriers provided by technology and to be with people when they hurt, even when it is the weirdest dadgum thing in the world. And it gets weird to be with people who hurt. And the next thing you know, you are sitting listening to some dumb 80s song on the radio and you are crying your eyes out because you just hurt for people. We live in a world that values a stiff upper lip, even if you aren't from English stock. We live in a world that values strong chins and getting back up for round two so you can knock Apollo Creed down finally, even if it takes a second movie. We live in a world that values power and often indifference over brokenness. But we don't worship a God who values that. We worship a God who values vulnerability and sacrifice and heartache and pain in your guts on behalf of those around you. Not just your friends, but even your enemies. Amen.